Hey guys, before we get started today, I wanted to remind you to check out the First Draft podcast with ESPN experts Mel Kiper Jr., Todd McShay, and Field Yates, who bring you the latest intel on the NFL draft every Monday and Thursday. Listen wherever you get your pods and check out the Monday shows on ESPN's YouTube page. Welcome back to the Manicom Show featuring Lenny. The only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thought the Super Bowl commercial with the robotic dog was very offensive. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. Dominique, I actually didn't think any of the ads were particularly memorable in this year's Super Bowl. What about you?
Yeah, nothing stood out. I mean, it felt like a nostalgia fest, the whole yes. Super Bowl halftime show in commercials. Everything was nostalgia fest, and I don't know, it just kind of washed over me, and it happened. The Rock was so corny, though. I'm sorry.
So I missed that, actually. Okay. But I heard about it. Yeah. But yeah, there was a Cable Guy reference, Austin Powers. Of course, yeah, the whole Super Bowl halftime. The Larry David, yes, for crypto. I guess that means like millennials right now maybe have more buying power. I don't know. I haven't thought it through. Yeah. In any case, pretty underwhelming commercials. Excellent halftime show. I'm going to say medium Super Bowl. Where do you fall before we get started and actually talking about the game?
Yeah, I think medium's fair. I think it started out pretty good. I enjoyed that. And it ended in a one possession game with Aaron Donald shutting it down. It was kind of, and I feel ashamed to say this as a defensive player, it was a little anticlimactic because it was like, oh, it's over. Aaron Donald just crushed him back to back plays. Okay.
Yes, which felt inevitable, which is weird because I guess with Joe Burrow, it's not like when you remember the NFC Championship when Garoppolo had like, I don't know, a minute, 2 minutes left and was driving. Everybody kind of knew it was over. You would think with
driving.
Joe. It was like 2 minutes left, I want to say, when Garoppolo had the ball.
I'm objecting to the word driving. Oh. That's all.
Okay. When he was in the position to drive. Yeah, no, he was firmly in park there the whole time. But, you know, with Burrow, you'd think, based on everything we had seen this season, maybe something could happen here. And they got Money Mac, and they could get in field goal range quite easily. But at that point in the game, especially particularly in the second half, given how utterly dominated they had been by the Rams' pass rush, I did not, Mina Kimes, believe that Joe Burrow was going to actually drive the length of the field.
Yeah, I didn't think he was either, but I still was surprised by how it ended. The first pass to Chase was a really good throw because, I mean, Jalen Ramsey jumped the hell out of that route, and that's a pick six with most quarterbacks, but he threw it away from Jalen Ramsey.
Yes.
And Chase turned it into a big play, so it felt like, and that was what they did all day. It wasn't just the second half. Well, I guess the D-line dominated in the second half, but it felt like the Rams were much, much better than the Bengals. The Bengals made some really big plays, cheated a couple times, and that kept them in the game.
Cheated. Well, to the Bengals fans who are listening, who are screaming Logan Wilson's name right now, I'm sorry for my colleague, Dominique Foxworth. However, y'all did face mask the hell of Jalen Ramsey.
The Logan Wilson play was not the same as a 70-yard touchdown.
No, it really, it wasn't. The face mask was also weirdly underplayed during the broadcast in a way. They didn't have the replay immediately, and all they said was Jalen Ramsey fell. Wow. And I thought, no, something happened there. I got to see it. I think Ron Tolbert, who didn't exactly cover himself in glory, the reffing crew, afterwards said they didn't call it because he didn't turn his face. Literally, is it T-1000 or the Terminator who turns his entire head around? That's exactly what it looked like. I mean, he got yanked to the ground by his face, but that is not where I want to start off talking about. I want to start off talking about the Rams. I guess kind of chronologically, Dominique, because in the beginning of this game, you talked about how it started fun. Based on how the Rams' offense looked at the beginning when OBJ was in the game, I thought it was going to be a blowout. I mean, maybe not a blowout necessarily because the Bengals had a pretty good response on offense, but that Rams' offense, the one we saw on the first two drives before Odell Beckham Jr. was hurt, looked like, I mean, they just looked unstoppable.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week, I think it was. I think you and I both were like a little hesitant to say it, but thought it was going to kind of be a dominating performance, and then the first quarter and until OBJ got hurt, it seemed like we were right. And then he got hurt, and it changed absolutely everything. It's amazing how they could become so reliant on a player that they just got.
I mean, did that shock you? Because so I want to spend the first kind of half of this talking about the Rams offense against the Bengals defense. The total collapse of the Rams offense after the injury until the game-winning drive, which we could talk about in a moment. You know, we're still talking about an offense with Cooper Kupp, who's arguably the best wide receiver in football. And I guess Van Jefferson is their number two. He was a second-round draft pick, but watching him take on the OBJ role, frankly, in that offense, especially with the vertical stuff, right, where they were trying to hit him on some of those slot fades, like, I don't know if it was more of like a testament to OBJ or a referendum in a negative way on Van Jefferson, but it was kind of astounding to me how bad the Rams offense looked. And then, of course, we have to also point a very large finger at Sean McVay, who...
Wow.
I mean, let's put it this way. If the Rams lose this game, if Cooper Kupp doesn't convert that fourth and one and on the game-winning drive, we're all talking about how Sean McVay collapsed, no?
Yeah, and his mistakes in the previous round are more highlighted. Then we're re-looking at this entire playoffs, and we're talking about how Sean McVay kind of crumbled. Then we look back at the previous Super Bowl and how he got out-coached in that one by the Patriots. And I think the idea... The concept of this young, amazing coach is a little different because I don't think he was special as far as coaching. Like, I hesitate to say that he was bad coaching in this game. Last game, but it's not fair to say completely bad because the play design is still him, but it felt like in-game decisions. I don't know. I feel like these offensive gurus, it goes for him and Shanahan, they need to hire a head coach. Like, if you want a guru all game, you need somebody else to make some of the bigger decisions.
I like that. I mean, listen, if your running backs, really Cam Akers for the most part, are, I mean, God, some of the stats, I'm trying to find the craziest one. They're all astounding how inefficient the Rams' run game was. I mean, it ultimately ended up averaging like 1.6 yards per carry or something, but I think I saw a stat somewhere, and I would believe it was Keegan Abdu at Next Gen Stats who had it. Okay, yes. All right, so here. So, yes, it was 1.9 yards per carry overall, which is the worst ever for a Super Bowl winner. They didn't have a single successful by EPA play until that game-winning drive running the football. So basically, every time they ran the football was a win for the Cincinnati Bengals. And I think if you're gonna rail on McVay anything, it's his utter refusal to go away from that for 2.5 quarters. And look, they're like, it's again, it's not his fault that they lost OBJ. And like, there were, I think, some examples clearly where like the route running wasn't there. You remember the bunch concept where like the two dudes ran into each other and then Stafford missed the throw to Skronik or whatever. But like, there was another stat that really grabbed my attention. This was from our folks that when OBJ was playing, Stafford was throwing into tight windows 8% of the time. Afterwards, it was 29% of the time. So clearly, like, the wide receivers were not separating the way they were before, and you can't blame Sean McVay for execution. But the obstinance when it came to running the football was astounding to me personally.
Yeah, I mean, the only way you can explain that is you don't trust your quarterback, and you're like, I don't want to give him any chances to blow it. But, I mean, you got the quarterback because you didn't trust the last one. I rewatched while we were talking. I rewatched all of Van Jefferson's targets because it stuck in my mind that he couldn't create separation.
Yes.
And the targets, yeah, I rewatched them. Yeah, he couldn't get any separation because he got those OBJ one-on-ones that OBJ was running away from, and the closest defender seemed like he was 2 or 3 yards behind him. And Van Jefferson has a guy in his hip pocket on these fades that he's throwing. The one positive Van Jefferson play was that one that Stafford missed him in the end zone where he kind of got behind the defense and was wide open and Stafford missed him. But I found myself, Stafford's two interceptions, it felt like to me neither of them were really his fault.
Like, the first one was the arm punt, right? And then the second one was the Skronik tip, which was a little behind, but they were not egregiously bad at all.
The one that was behind, it got intercepted, but he didn't throw it in an interceptable position.
Yes.
Like, Skronik put it there. Like, if you're going to drop it, that's fine. Or it's a bad ball, you can't catch it. That's one thing. And Van Jefferson, it surprised me when Stafford threw it up, that jump ball. Like, receivers want you to give him a chance. And he, like, had his hands down like he was going to catch it in the basket. Just go attack that. But he became a dad. That's pretty awesome.
That's true. It really didn't feel like he was. I mean, it almost made me appreciate OBJ more watching Van Jefferson play the OBJ role. And like, you know, as we've spent it for and talk about the Rams now, as much as I think their approach has paid off and as much production they've gotten out of some role players, you know, we're talking about two drafts where you spent a second rounder on Van Jefferson and a second rounder on Tutu Atwell, who got hurt but like wasn't really playing much. And, you know, as we spin it forward, we'll see what happens with OBJ and his injury and Von Miller as well. But like, it is very obvious, and also, of course, Robert Woods and coming back from injury, but it is very obvious that this team cannot function with only one wide receiver and Cooper Kupp until the game-winning drive when have you seen the movie Draft Day?
No.
Okay.
I care about my eyes.
Yeah, that's a point for you that you haven't seen it. This isn't a spoiler, but there's a point in the movie where Kevin Costner's character, who plays the GM of the Browns, has a post-it note that says Vontae Mack, no matter what. It's like he's going to draft a character. Story doesn't really work if you haven't seen Draft Day. Anyways, I feel like the game-winning drive, they put up a post-it note that said Cooper Kupp, no matter what. And I don't know why that post-it note wasn't up earlier, even when he was being doubled. I frankly don't care. But in this draft, he was actually, Dominique, what surprised me was they were able to get him one-on-ones a lot because they were in tempo the whole time, and he got a lot of favorable matchups. But even when he didn't, like on the insane bonkers 22-yard no-look pass, you know, where he was pretty well covered, he's freaking Cooper Kupp. Like, so that's another thing against McVay. Like, I really think the inability to get involved. I mean, he had more catches on that drive than he did in the entire game.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's on. Yeah, it feels like it's on McVay. It feels like it's on Stafford.
It's a little bit of both, yeah.
Yeah, but it seemed like they got it right when they had to get it right. And they were, like, we're offensive-centric. All of us like to talk about that. But, like, the Rams defense kept them in a position where they could mess around and run the ball, and they could not target Cooper Kupp until they absolutely had to. But that pass that you mentioned, the no-looker, like that, the gumption. I don't know if your podcast is for is a family podcast, the words that I'm thinking, but to throw that ball right there, and it wasn't like, not that somebody would be showing off in that moment, it was 100% necessary, because Von Bell is sitting right there waiting for the route, and he's doing exactly what you coach is, you hold it until he cocks the throw, and then you break downhill to make the tackle. And he held his position. Then Stafford pulls the ball back to throw, and Bell breaks down, and Stafford throws it without looking right. And even with all that, Kupp's still not open, and he has to throw it just outside the reach of Bell. That is the pass of his life.
The face I made when I saw the end zone view.
Yeah,
it's not okay. Yeah, you know what? Like, struck me about that whole drive and that pass or whatever. This week we talked a lot about the last Super Bowl and how Sean McVay didn't really adjust, right? And that's ultimately how they lost. And there were some adjustments made on that drive. I mean, I talked about the tempo, for example, the use of tempo. The fact that they stopped running it on early downs, and I think a lot of Kupp's targets came, I think most of them actually came on second down on this drive. And that they did a pretty good job of basically, you know, spreading the Bengals out. They had them. I mean, the Bengals were seeding, and I'd like to hear your thoughts about this, a very, very soft zone to them the whole drive on certain points, you know, giving them the sticks, which I was a little bit perplexed by. But ultimately, you watch a throw like that, and like, that's Sean McVay has nothing to do with that. This is. The whole narrative about McVay was always like, he just wants to be a joystick, you know, playing the quarterback or whatever. No, this is the most talented quarterback right now on the field with the most talented wide receiver on the field making an absolutely insane play, and it's ultimately why they won the game.
Yeah, it felt like to me watching the way they played that final drive and how they committed to stopping the run, it felt like the Bengals had decided they're going to wait for Matt Stafford to make a mistake. They're not going to put their guys in tough spots. They're not going to challenge the receivers. They're going to sit back and hope that Matt Stafford crumbles in this moment or makes one mistake. They were expecting him to throw a jump ball to Jaquaski Tartt in the middle of the field. Like, that's what it seemed like. And they ran cover three. They ran cover four a couple times. But that last drive, it was all cover three until they got down in the red zone in a position where you can no longer run zones like that. And you have to play man up. And then they went after Eli, and which sucks for him. But, I mean, it's not much you can do at that point. You got the best receiver in football in man coverage in a gotta-have-it situation. It's a tough spot to be in.
Were you impressed by the Bengals defense for the most part?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this whole run, the playoffs was, I guess impressed is the wrong word, but I was pleasantly surprised. And yeah, I mean, it's not fair to say impressed is the wrong word. I was impressed what they did the second half against the Chiefs. And then in this game, I was impressed because it felt like the offense really didn't stand a chance. And they had crazy big plays, like the one-handed catch from Chase, which I guess you can say that's not crazy. Yeah. That's what you expect from him, but that was an outrageous catch. Like, the what led to points for them did not feel sustainable. And then you look up and they have the lead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of what we saw from this defense for the most part outside of that drive is pretty similar to what we've seen over the course of their postseason run, which is they, you know, are extremely well-coached, disciplined, like you said, waiting for Matt Stafford to make some sort of a mistake. Some pretty unique pressure looks. They threw in some of the drop eight, you know, from the AFC Championship with mixed results. But for the most part, I think, like, if the Bengals had won this game, I would be looking to, I don't know, like, Logan Wilson and DJ Reader, who I thought was fantastic. And it would be kind of the same story of the last game for me. I mean, maybe Joe Burrow makes a crazy play, and we're all talking about Joe Burrow. Also, it's sports media, so we're probably saying Joe Burrow won the entire game as the greatest quarterback to ever play. But point is, like, I don't think you can take anything away from all of these Bengals, quote-unquote, role players on defense. Because for the most part in this game, again, outside of that one drive, I thought they played really well. I mean, the run defense was fantastic. It was very deliberate, but it wasn't, you know, like, for the most part, it's hard for me to find much fault with either them or Lou Anarumo's approach to this game.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm being completely honest with you, like, it's hard for me to find much fault with anything that the Bengals did all game. Like, I think that Boyd's drop pass, like, you could have caught that. The fourth down early in the game, there was someone open, and Burrow didn't see Higgins on the side. There was that. And, like, outside of that, I don't know what else you wanted them to do. They were not as good. They're not as talented as the team they were playing against. And they were not talented in areas that you can't really cover for. Like, if you're close, like, they got a little bit better D-line than your offensive line, we'll figure something out. But it's not like they were blitzing and you could screen them out of that. I would have liked to see some more, like, design Joe Burrow runs on third down, because it feels like that might pull them out of those super wide rush lanes that they were in. But other than that, like, you just got beat. Sometimes they're better than you. And they didn't necessarily, based on the stats and what we've seen all season, nobody thought the Bengals really deserved to be there. They won enough games to be there, and they got beat.
You mentioned a couple of things I want to talk about with Joe Burrow and some of the defensive looks they're getting. So let's take a quick break, come back, and talk about that side of the ball.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow, MinaShow.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
So, Dominique, the whole week, the overriding narrative going into this game was that the advantage that the Rams had in the trenches would be too massive, too insurmountable, talent-wise, for the Bengals to overcome. And, well, narrative's voice, that's what happened. There's a lot of interesting aspects to this game, and we can talk about play-calling decisions, and I can yell about Sean McVay running the ball and whatever, but for the most part, it's pretty freaking obvious why this game turned out the way it did.
Yeah, I mean, all the things that we expected to happen happened, and the D-line was completely dominant. We are going to focus, as we should, focus on those last two plays by Aaron Donald. Those are huge, enormous, legendary plays, just as big as the Cooper Kupp plays and the Matt Stafford passes on the final drive, because that final drive for the Bengals can tie the game or win the game. So they needed those plays just as much as they needed those touchdowns. However, that third down off of the Skowronek interception, the third down, third and one, I think it was, when Aaron Donald got a sack, like that was huge. Forced a field goal right there. That changes the complexion of the game. And then Von Miller, rotating or sliding the line in the other direction, and Von Miller gets one-on-ones and gets sacks. Like, those are huge plays throughout the course of the game. 7 sacks is not something you can survive in the course of the game. You did it against 9 one time against a worse offensive team, but that's not – it's an aberration, not a strategy. We all kind of thought it was going to catch up to him, and they almost outran it again, but you can't.
I was thinking about after the last Super Bowl when you said you got high on the Mahomes supply and you picked him even knowing that there was the Chiefs were at such a disadvantage in the trenches. And I don't think Joe Burrow – like, I wouldn't compare the Bengals offense to the Chiefs offense by any stretch of the imagination. But I was thinking about what you said going into this week. Like, I don't – how can you pick against this pass rush against this offensive line? Now, granted, Sean – am I being too hard on Sean McVay? Tell me right now before I finish.
No, you're not. That's what people come to your podcast for. They don't come for the normal stuff that everyone's going to say. They come for the truth.
This dude got – so lucky. First of all, he got lucky when Kyle Shanahan punted, and he got lucky in this game because he would be getting the business today, from me at least. But anyway, sorry. Back to the Rams pass rush. The one thing I did find curious, though, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, is they weren't super dominant early in the game. And whereas Sean McVay took a while to make some adjustments, and then, you know, on that game-winning drive, we talked about some of the things that they did. I thought Raheem Morris was a lot quicker to make adjustments to get some of those matchups you talk about, you know, with those overloads and getting Aaron Donald and Von Miller in place and sometimes adding that fifth pass rusher to the – and some of that, of course, was just, you know, at a certain point, just overwhelming. The Bengals' offensive line was just overwhelmed. But I want to say around maybe, certainly in the second half, but maybe a little bit earlier is when it suddenly just felt like, oh, they just have no chance in this thing, the Bengals offense.
Yeah, I mean, there's no answer when you have a mismatch everywhere. So you just have to figure out how to get the guys you want in the matchups you want. So I think that's what took them a second is my guess is, and I've never been in a coach's meeting, but the way I would go into a game is I would anticipate, I know what I'm going to do. Anticipate how they are going to respond and have a couple different kind of alterations that I want to add to it depending on what their response is. And that's what it felt like. They saw the protection that they were majoring in. You don't go into a game with all your protections. Maybe you can switch to them if you have to, but you're going to show them throughout the course of the first quarter. All your passes, you're like, all right, this is their plan for the day. And then from that, you're like, all right, they seem to be I'm sliding the center to Aaron Donald's side. Yeah. Surprise, surprise. It's not the first time we've seen that. We know how to answer that. Let's get somebody up in the gap to make sure that they turn to him. They have to respect him, whether he blitzes or not. You get a linebacker up in the gap. Or you go ahead and let Aaron Donald be over there and you put Von Miller on the other side and let him work one-on-one. And it seems like when you have these type of tools, then it doesn't take much. And not everybody can do that. But when you got those guys up there, you're like, all right, do whatever you want. Just let me see what you're going to do. You don't have an answer. We have better guys. As long as I react to what you're doing, that's fine. Because someone's going to have to win a one-on-one up front.
Yeah, I mean, even after Aaron Donald, it's like, oh, you have Von Miller. But even after Von Miller, you have Leonard Floyd, Greg Gaines, and A'shaun Robinson, who has had a fantastic season, not just against the run, which we've talked about, but also getting that interior pass rush. One of the sacks was a Robinson sack, by the way. It's hard to keep track of all the sacks. And that the Robinson sack in particular jumped out to me. I think it was the third quarter, if I remember correctly, because Joe Burrow almost escaped and he kind of stepped up and lifted his leg. It reminded me a little bit of the Chiefs game where he was like so good at eluding Chris Jones. And A'shaun Robinson, all 300-something pounds of him, I don't know, shed his block, flipped his hips, and brought Joe Burrow down. And in that moment, it just occurred to me like, oh my God. As you said, whatever answer you provide for Aaron Donald, the Rams have a counterpunch that is going to make this an impossibility. And I think that's the other thing I wanted to ask you about, just because of that disadvantage. Like, is there anything they could have done? I mean, you talked a little bit about the difficulty of running the screen game against them. Like, is there anything, watching Zach Taylor's game plan, watching the Bengals offense, that you feel like they could have done or at least leaned on a bit more to address this disadvantage?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned I'd like to see quarterback design runs, but then you're putting your superstar quarterback in more danger, getting him hit. Well, but it's like he's going to get hit anyway. So yeah, I'd like to see that, because that'll at least slow down the edge rushers. I also would love to see Chase in motion or Chase off the ball in a stack, and it's just like a smoke route. Quick, get it out to him and let him work. You see how hard he is to tackle and let him do like that type of stuff that takes the pressure off of the offensive line. Give them some plays off. And if you can run the ball, that's fine. That gives them some plays off too. But you don't want to ask them to do that all the time. You want to give them some plays off, and you also want to keep the defensive linemen on their toes. Like every time it's a passing situation, maybe it's not going to be a pass. Oh, can I hate on McVay one more time for you?
Yeah, get in here.
3rd and 5. Okay. I try not to be one of these people who like reacts to the result and think that when you do.
Oh, is this the fake? Wait, you're talking about the fake, the trick play?
The reverse pass.
Yeah.
The reverse pass. So I'm fine. I love a trick play.
But why?
It's 3rd and 5.
But why?
No one expects you to run the ball on 3rd and 5. The point of that type of play is it's a toss. So let's be in a toss situation. First down. Yeah. Yeah. 2nd and 4, something that anticipates a toss. You're going to run a toss, reverse, and have Cooper Kupp, which I imagine that play was designed for Odell Beckham because he's the one who actually can throw.
Incredible.
But
incredible.
You're going to run it anyway with Cooper Kupp on 3rd and 5?
So I'm just checking to see if Cooper Kupp was a high school quarterback right now. And no. He was played both defensive back and wide receiver.
Oh, gosh. But I mean, all that aside, 3rd and 5.
Yeah, I agree. That was a terrible play call. Also, Cooper Kupp should be ashamed because
and
Joe Mixon threw a beautiful pass in this game.
Didn't
beautiful
you
touch pass.
Trade away everything because you didn't trust the quarterback you have? Now you got a quarterback that you trust, and on
also,
big downs, you're like, hey.
At that point in the game, he was throwing it fine, right? Like, this is what I keep going back to with McVay. Like, with... It's weird because I've been so hard on Zach Taylor this year, but I find myself, as I try to come up with various criticisms for him, acknowledging the fact that he was so hamstrung by what we're discussing. Right. Whereas Sean McVay, you're not hamstrung. I mean, I understand there's a talent discrepancy, but the answer to that talent discrepancy is not, you know, the Cooper Kupp. Just making me mad all over again.
I'm sorry.
Yes. So, anyways, back to the Bengals offense against the Rams defense. I am just not – I agree with you. I think maybe some more – like, some more screens to Chase, you know, just because of how good he is at yards after the catch and how bad the Rams have been at tackling him. When they tried quick game stuff, it wasn't really working. The Rams, I thought, were really successful when they were in dime, and you know, they were pretty light and fast and did a decent job of chasing down all of the short stuff. But for the most part, it's just, I guess maybe there could have been a few more plays where they had left in some more bodies to protect the. I think the if I remember correctly, I think the go ball to Chase, they may have had seven in. Just by the way, incredible catch by Chase on that one. But for the most part, I felt a little bit, I'm not comparing him to Patrick Mahomes, but I did feel a little bit like I did after that Super Bowl, where I was like, I don't even really know what to say about Joe Burrow's performance in this one. You know, like, I don't really feel like this is a situation where we can even evaluate the quarterbacking.
Yeah, I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. I think he did fine, considering, all things considered. Like, I guess they could have run the ball more, some whams or traps, anything that is designed to get the defensive line at separate levels. Like, that sort of stuff might have been useful. RPOs, like, that works with the zone coverage stuff that you're seeing a lot of, and it's quicker. So there are things that they could have done, but I honestly don't think that they would have changed the outcome. Like, they made the big plays. Because I don't think that they had the team to drive all the way down the field multiple times. Like, again, their points were result of big plays most of the time. And so all this other stuff is dink and dunk and crossing your fingers, which I don't see that working either.
Raheem Morris, you want to give him some love as we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, he had these weapons and he utilized them and he adjusted going forward. So, like, I think – I was hesitant to crown Brandon Staley last year because of how talented that team was. But, I mean, in this situation, you saw the adjustments that were being made. And maybe had Brandon Staley made it deeper in the playoffs, we would have saw that also. But it's nice when you have all of these weapons. It makes it easier, but I guess it also it requires more, I guess, mental, like, agility. Because you're like, we can do 13 different things. Let me narrow it down to the three right ones for this game. Let me coach these guys up and use them. So that's a skill that we saw from Raheem in this game.
I felt like in every playoff game, they had a unique offensive challenge. You know, with Kyler, it was obviously blitzing him, but also finding a way to use that extra blitzer with the Rams. It's always five to get, you know, contain him, right? Spy him a little bit. With the Niners, of course, it was stopping the run game. And then with this one, there were some adjustments. I mean, you know, early on, the Bengals were having a lot more success. And I think some of the adjustments they made with their pressure packages, which you and I discussed, were quite successful. They played a little bit more man than I expected as well. So earlier in the game and then switched to playing more zone. But I just think generally, like, he put together a really phenomenal postseason in terms of, okay, I've got these star players. How can I get the most out of them, but also find ways for all these various role players, whether it's an Eric Weddle or an Ernest Jones, who was excellent in this game, to contribute? So I thought it was just really, really impressive. It's funny to me, like, Kevin O'Connell's going to be the head coach. I don't know what he does for the Rams necessarily, but, like, I mean, you watch that Super Bowl, both sides of the ball, Raheem Morris is the guy who I would hire just based on this Super Bowl. So
Eric Weddle, watching him play,
bro,
was
it makes my back hurt watching him play.
That was clearly a man for whom there was no tomorrow. He was like, my career is over, but I'm going to throw my body around. I don't need my shoulders or my chest after today. I'm going to give this to the cause.
Would you ever feel that temptation, being like if a Super Bowl team called you and said, Dominique Foxworth, we need you for one last job, please come out of retirement?
And absolutely you're in,
not. Okay, but in this scenario, you're as good as Eric Weddle, not, you know, yourself.
And you waited till the end before you say something mean to me.
And you get to play. And you get to play with Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. So, you know, you're not being asked to do that much.
I think that I would like to try to do that, but I'm far enough away, to be honest. Is like, no one would make that call, and my body would fall apart. Like, no thanks. I'll pass. I'll come out and cheer. I can go dance in the end zone in a hoodie and flip-flops. I can do that. I can grab you 15-yard penalty.
That was rough. I hate all taunting and penalties, pardon me. Yeah. Obviously not all taunting. And I never want to be the person who agrees with the refs in just about any situation. But that was a tough look for Brian Hargreaves. That was a tough
really
look.
Really bad. I don't know how you explain that. It's not like he just came off the sideline a little bit.
Let's wrap by talking about these teams going forward. And I want to start with the Rams because there's like a couple narratives around this team that I don't agree with necessarily. One is that other teams are going to look at what they did and say, yes, all in, it works, you know, push your chips to the center of the table. I just think that's kind of ridiculous because so many crazy things had to happen for this Rams team to come together. First, you have to have the OBJ saga, which is bonkers and not really like something we've seen in football. Jalen Ramsey, who's one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL, has to be available for a trade on a bad team that's willing to do it. And then a good quarterback, also has to be on a bad team. Like, that's the thing about Matthew Stafford, that is unusual, I think, is that, you know, he's a good quarterback on a shitty team. Right. So when he wassed out, they were willing to do it because they were willing to rip the Band-Aid and do a rebuild. And I just don't see that happening often, whether we talk about an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson or whatever. There's not the same incentive for the teams that they're on to be part of these types of trades.
You also have to inherit Aaron Donald. You have to inherit the best defensive player in recent history. player on that team. And
that they drafted. Yeah.
Yeah. Did they draft him? I mean, McVay didn't.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. But they have to inherit him. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was speaking from McVay's standpoint, I guess. But that's part of the team draft him. Yeah, yeah. That's part of all of this. Is to get an undersized defensive tackle who cannot be blocked by one, two, or three people. So that changes all of this. I think it's hard to copy all of that. The idea that, and also part of the reason why it worked is because it was a zig. Like, if they're the only people in the league that think are valuing first round picks the way they are, then there has value. If multiple teams start to do this, then there is no value there anymore. But yeah, I don't think teams will follow it, as football is not basketball or baseball where some teams decide midway through the season that they're sellers and other teams decide they're buyers.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm kind of saying is, like, you know, even if you're willing to part with your first-round picks, what are the odds that you're going to end up with a Jalen Ramsey
available, right?
Versus, and this is just a totally random example, Jamal Adams, per se. No, like, if you look at the history of massive trades for first-round picks, of first-round picks, they don't usually work out. And the Rams, in finding Ramsey, you know, in some ways, Dominic, I actually think the riskiest move of all was Von Miller. Trading a second and a third for a guy who a lot of people at that point in the season thought was not the player he was for a half a season, not even entirely a full season, and then having him return to form he did. To me, that might be the hardest of all of these moves. That might be the thing that's most impossible to reproduce.
Yeah, it paid off, but I don't think that it's advisable. And I guess that's not a model that you could follow. That's not a consistent strategy. It's like give up two high value picks for a guy to play a half a season and a guy who's past his prime, even though he did play quite well in this run, he is past his prime. Like, that's, if people start following that as a blueprint, then we're going to see a lot of turnover in front offices around the league.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other, I guess, thing I want to dispel or disagree with is the idea that this is kind of like it for the Rams. Like, I do think they're probably never going to be better than they were this team, at least in the near future. But assuming Aaron Donald doesn't retire, if Aaron Donald retires, throw them out the window. Like, this is all dumb. But by the way, again, not speaking as a Seahawks fan, but go out on top, King. It's a great moment for you. Go out a legend. Truly. It's mostly the same team. Like, OBJ is hurt, and then we don't know what's going to happen with Von Miller. I do see a universe in which he comes back, though, candidly. But for the most part, otherwise, still a good team.
Yeah,
still
it's still a good
key
team.
People. Like, you lose Whitworth, but yeah. Joe Noteboom was pretty good. I don't know.
The great Eric Weddle. You're going to miss him. The one thing that I did notice myself thinking last night, which may be completely off, like I can't psychoanalyze these guys, but this felt like, and maybe it's because all the reports that everyone's retiring, this felt like such an exhale for this team.
Yeah.
And it felt like something that's going to be hard to bounce back from. It's not the run it back type of team. It didn't feel like that. Emotionally, it felt like, huh, like this felt like a continuation of the Super Bowl they lost. And this felt like the final chapter, the final season. We did it. And so recreating whatever incentives they need to is not going to be easy in recreating the luck that came along with this. And them, like, they had some injuries, but they've been really healthy.
Yes.
Over these past couple of seasons. So, like, all that stuff is hard to imagine. So, yeah, I don't know. And Aaron Donald, like, I have to assume he's going to retire because I've never.
Really? You think he will?
Well, maybe not, but I've never heard. He's had 8 years in the league.
Yes.
Imagine someone who's the best player in football at 8 years in the league, and they ask them, are you considering retiring? And he says, well, I just want to enjoy this moment right now. Like, that is not something you say if you're coming back. Like, imagine before we heard the Aaron Donald reports, if you would have asked Aaron Donald, are you considering retiring? How would you have reacted to him saying, well, I just want to enjoy this moment right now?
Someone in the NFL actually asked me a couple weeks ago if I had heard that. And I was like, what? No.
Yeah.
So this has been floating around for a minute. Again.
Right. He kills that. If it's like, I don't know. No football player doesn't kill that.
I guess, like, this is one of those things where it's like, we don't know what he's going through. We don't know what his body is like, right? I don't think he's been as banged up maybe as some. But, you know, it is also, though, I guess part of the reason it's hard to imagine is, like, we're talking about a player who's already in the greatest of all time conversation with Lawrence Taylor and, like, if he plays again, will probably be an All-Pro again. And, like,
right. It's
just kind of, I think we as, again, someone who's not putting their body through that, and it's easy for me to say, well, why would you not want to cement your status in, like, NFL history or whatever? His status is already there, but, like, become that unequivocal, you know, that obvious number one. But I don't know, man. I don't know. We'll see. Again, as a CX fan, you absolutely hate to see it. You hate to see it. But I do want to hit the other side really quickly because, you know, I think with, like, I think you're absolutely right. Like, with the Rams, there's, like, a feeling where it's, you feel like, okay, God, imagine if they had lost, you know. With the Bengals, the narrative is kind of, oh, yeah, we're young, we'll get back there, and nah, it's not easy to get back to the Super Bowl, I'll say this. So my question to you is, like, do you think this Bengals team that has a ton of cap space next year, and obviously it will spend that to fortify their offensive line, one would imagine, do you think that they're well-equipped to continue being, if not a Super Bowl team, at least a dominant team in the AFC?
Dominant? No. I mean, you said the key word at the end there, or the key acronym, is AFC. I think that they can fix their offensive line in one offseason. The Chiefs and the Chargers, recent examples that can happen. You put a lot of resources towards that. Their defense was not dominant, but I think this year of experience has been good for them. Like, they're a relatively young team. Well, actually, defensively, they're not that young. But they can address those issues. They can be good, but they also are still going to be in, what did Harbaugh call it, like the quarterback conference? They're still going to be in the quarterback conference, and they're going to have to get past either or both of the Chiefs and the Bills. And then they have the AFC North. Like, they have to get through that, which is never easy. So,
well, I think it'll never be easier than it was this year, in my opinion, because of all the injuries to the other teams. Yeah.
Right. And the Browns will be better. Baker will be healthy. The Ravens will get healthy and be better. The Steelers may get a quarterback. Otherwise, their defense is going to give you a headache, but they're still a not very good team. But I do think that the competition is going to be too steep to declare them some sort of dominant team, especially after how we saw them play in this playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I would not call them dominant. I would not have them as the favorites. But I do think, you know, with the clear mandate, cap space, relatively few free agents, they got to sign Jesse Bates, who was obviously awesome in the postseason. And then, of course, the most important thing of all, which is they got a really, 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 really good quarterback. And, right, you know, that's what they learned this year. I mean, they already liked him his first year, but I think this year you come out of it, assuming he's healthy, feeling really, really, really good about that. And a lot better about your coaches, too, although I've been critical of them at times. All right, speaking of criticism, as always, wrapping with five questions for our guest, four from me, one from Lenny.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Question number one. I assume you've been following this Kyler Murray social media story.
I have. I'm shocked.
Okay. So for those who don't know, it starts with Kyler Murray unfollowing the Cardinals. Everyone kind of writes that off. You know, Giannis unfollowed his team a few years ago. This could be nothing. Maybe he's selling an NFT or something. Then, more smoke. On Super Bowl Sunday, our Chris Mortensen reports that sources in the Cardinals organization, not fans of Kyler Murray, I don't want to misquote him, but basically, you know, saying that he's not mature, maybe would be the right way to phrase. Finger pointing. They call him a finger pointer, which of course is deeply ironic coming from an anonymous source. My question for you, Dominique, is like, is there any way this ends well?
Yes, I think there is a way that this ends well. I think it's unlikely to end well, but I don't understand, if you believe that he's immature and selfish and a finger pointer, why, I guess we don't know who this anonymous source is, but the assumption is the anonymous source has some power, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's like a backup linebacker, but the assumption is that they have some power. But if you have a problem with him being immature and finger pointing, why in the world is the way that you want to handle this to leak that he's the problem in the media in a league that is quarterback thirsty? Like, nobody is going to side with you, and even if they do, it doesn't matter. You're trying to win the press conference or win the public sympathy. Call Kyler and figure this out. Do what you got to do to figure it out, because this ain't the way.
Yeah. My feeling is, like, I don't know, it might be true. I'm not going to immediately say that, you know, he does kind of look a little irritated on the sidelines sometimes.
Who cares?
But at the end of the day, well, Dominique, you know that. I mean, I'm not talking about the irritation on the sidelines thing, but leadership matters. Like, it's not something I talk about a lot on this podcast, but whatever. But at the end of the day, if this is coming down to Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury, and Steve Keim, I think we all know who you're choosing here. So you make it work with Kyler. If one of those other two legs of the tripod is dissatisfied with the quarterback, well, buddy's got to go. And frankly, I don't know. I've been critical of Steve Keim separately from any of this. And Cliff Kingsbury, obviously. All right, question number two. Mortensen had a busy Sunday, man. He also reported that the Colts might be interested in moving on from Carson Wentz via trade or release. Do you think that is going to happen?
Jim Irsay owns the team, so
that's a good
who
answer.
Knows what's going to happen out that's there.
Really.
Like, he's liable to do anything. Given the press conference that Ballard gave, like, that seemed like they were done with
that
him.
Yeah, so for those who didn't catch it, the GM of the Colts, Chris Ballard, was very critical of Carson. Like, more, much, I think that's probably the most critical I've ever heard Chris Ballard be, Dominique.
Of anybody.
That really got, yes. He's like a very, like, you know, just kind of by the book kind of dude. Mm-hmm. Looks like a dad in Pleasantville. So, like, that really got me a little bit, I don't know, my ears perked because that didn't sound. I mean, financially, it would be possible for them. I think they would save a reasonable, some double-digit cap space. I think my only suspicion, though, is not just the fact, obviously, there's enormous sunk costs with the draft picks and all that, but, like, who's going to be their quarterback, you know? And I think that's why it might not happen.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to pivot to, but maybe they're in the market for one of these other quarterbacks that might be moving. They're a roster that we all thought was a quarterback away, but we all thought they needed a different quarterback than the one that they got. Then they got the one that they got, and they are still a quarterback away. So,
Question three.
Go ahead.
Who was the best performer in the halftime show? Who's the highlight for you?
Best performer. Snoop.
Do you feel like it was the best halftime show of all time?
No.
Below
you do?
Prince. I don't know.
Are people saying that?
People were saying that on the internet. Like,
I mean, people say everything is the best everything ever after anything decent happens. So, yeah. I don't know. Like, I put it behind Prince. I put it behind Michael Jackson. I put it behind Beyonce. Yeah.
Okay.
I enjoyed Beyonce's. You didn't like Beyonce's?
No, I did. But this one really, the nostalgia factor.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is probably not a good reason to say it's the best. Like, it was the most nostalgic, but it was, you know what I mean? Is it actually the best? That's a good point of contention.
Poor 50.
Poor 50. What was the worst 50 Cent meme you saw?
There was no bad ones. I loved them all.
He never left the candy shop. I thought that was pretty mean. I don't approve of that. I just wanted to make
we don't like
stand.
It. We're putting it out there as an example of things you shouldn't say.
Laura asked us who our favorites were on NFL Live today, which was I was scared for her to ask because Orlovsky was there, and I think you can imagine how that question finished.
Oh, that guy. He's on cloud nine. He can do no wrong. I was on Get Up with him this morning, and I let him go off on all his many tangents because I'm not going to rain on that man's parade today.
I'm not going to rain on it either, but he was doing the whole, Stafford, no one believed. I'm like, literally, we've believed in this team all year. I said they're like the best team in football at various points during this season. This was a super team. They're like the opposite of an underdog. Like, in no universe was this team an underdog. I love you, Dan, though. I do love you. Yeah. All right. Fourth question. I just want to ask you a non-football one. What's something you've been either reading or watching lately that you'd like to recommend?
I'd like to recommend. I actually watched Nightmare Alley.
The Bradley Cooper movie?
Yeah. And it started out a little bit slow and weird, but it picked up. I like that at the end. I read How to Be Perfect.
I'm about halfway through that. That's by Michael Shore. Uh-huh. Did you get an inscription? You had to pay for an inscription. Did you pay for one?
Oh, no. I just ordered it online. What are we doing paying for inscriptions?
Well, I was trying to support the cause, whatever. Not like
What cause? I didn't know there was a cause. I heard he had a book coming out. I ordered it.
I actually think it might be going to charity. I think so. I didn't look too hard into it. But I asked him to write... Edelman should have been ruled out with a concussion during the Super Bowl. Sorry, my team cheats so much. And he did write it. But then he added a inscribed photo of the Malcolm Butler interception and put it in the book.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
Actually kind of dead to me.
Southside on HBO Max. It's a pretty funny show.
I've not heard about that one.
Yeah, it's older, but it used to be on Comedy Central, but now it's on HBO Max. It's pretty funny. I'm in season two right now. I'm also watching The Sopranos. I don't know how I got all this free time.
I don't know either. Well, I actually do know because you weren't in Los Angeles, which brings me to the final question from Lenny. He wants to know, how does it make you feel that ESPN had him on location at the Super Bowl and not you?
Oh, it was my choice. I feel fine. Sorry, Lenny. You got suckered in it. How much you get paid, Lenny?
Ha! Choice. Sure. I'm sure it was your choice.
Lenny's working for free.
Texting me what's going on out there.
Nobody texts you what's going on out there. Nobody cares about out there. Did you have fun? Not too much
more. I was in Anaheim.